The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus and his disciples left from there and began a journey through Galilee, but he did not wish anyone to know about it. He was teaching his disciples and telling them, "The Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him. And 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise." But they did not understand the saying, and they were afraid to question him. They came to Capernaum, and once inside the house, he began to ask them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they remained silent. They had been discussing among themselves on the way who was the greatest. Then he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "If anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all." Taking a child, he placed it in their midst, and putting his arms around it, he said to them, "Whoever receives one child such as this in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but the one who sent me." The Gospel of the Lord. In these last few Sundays, we had been reading from the Gospel of Mark, and we hear in these proclamation of Jesus a prophecy regarding his incoming death, his impending death. Jesus now is decided to go to Jerusalem, and he knows that in Jerusalem he will meet his fate. He will be tortured. He will be crucified, he will be buried, and then on the last day, he will rise from the dead. That's a proclamation, the prophecy of his fate in Jerusalem. And this now is the second time where Jesus prophesies that he's going to die in Jerusalem. The first, of course, was last Sunday when Peter proclaimed that Jesus is the Messiah, and the Lord said, "Yes, I am the Messiah, but the Messiah shall suffer and die." Twice the Lord proclaimed his death and his resurrection, but twice the disciples did not understand what the Lord is saying. They are focused more on their own ambitions. They are focused more on the things of this world, when before them is a proclamation of a promise, an answer, a response to the longing of Israel for the deliverance of Israel and for the coming of the Messiah. But of course, the coming of the Messiah is known to Israel from the very beginning. We hear that in the first reading today in the book of Wisdom. The book of Wisdom, there's this figure of a righteous man who's being persecuted and oppressed by the evil ones, the enemies. And in the words of those enemies, in the words of the evil ones, we can hear the echo of the words in Matthew during the Passion of the Lord. If he is the just one, if he is the Son of God, well, let him save himself. He saved others, well, why can't he save himself now? So that is already in the background of the Jewish imagination. And so now Jesus is standing before them and saying, "Behold, it is here." But then they were not able to appreciate this wonderful promise, this coming event of salvation history. Why? Because they are so focused on what St. John calls in his first letter, pride of life. You see, they were walking along the way, and after listening, after hearing the prophecy of Jesus' Paschal mystery, well, they were talking amongst themselves, discussing who is the greatest among them. They did not understand what the Lord is saying, but their focus on who is the greatest among them. They were on the way. You see, that is significant. They were on the way. Well, who is the way? The way is Jesus. They were on the way, and they were discussing things about about ambition. Well, that's not worthy of conversation on the way. And so Jesus had to correct them. Jesus had to remind them that that is not the value of the kingdom. They are on the way to the kingdom of God. They are on the way, like all of us, we are on the way to the promised land, the new Jerusalem. But such attitude of pride of life has no place in that kingdom. And so now the Lord speaks to them, corrects them, just like a good teacher correcting his students about what it means to live in the kingdom of God with a humble heart. Well, what is pride of life? Or what is pride, simply? What is pride? Well, Thomas Aquinas defined pride as arrogating to oneself the prerogative of the divine. So, in a sense, to be prideful is to be God. We see that in Genesis. We see that in the creation of man and woman. In Genesis, we know that Adam and Eve grasped the fruit of the tree of the good, of knowledge of good and evil. Well, who has the knowledge of good and evil? God. And so in grasping the fruit of that tree, they are wanting to become God. They are prideful. They're full of themselves. And so that gave us all the mess that we're in, and Jesus has to come and save all of us. So when one is prideful, when one has arrogated to oneself the prerogative of the divine, when one looks to oneself as God, well, the net effect of that is that the person is drawn into himself, is curved in, bent in on himself. In the words of St. Augustine, curvatus in se, to be bent in on oneself. You know, you're just looking at yourself, and everything revolves at that self that you are beholding. Everything is, the self becomes the standard of the world. And so, one could not see the world that is around him because everything is all about him. Now, that's a difficult life. That's a difficult life to be just looking at ourselves and focus on ourselves, because you know, and we all have an experience of this. When we are so conscious of ourselves, you know, we are not conscious of the many gifts that is around us. I remember one time when I was very new here in the States. That was a long time ago, in the early 80s. I had my first experience of Thanksgiving. And so I was there in the midst of all these beautiful people and this beautiful dinner, and I was very conscious of how I should act, how I should sound, the things I would say. I was very conscious. You see, I was turned in on myself at that point, because I was prideful, you know, that I should not be perceived as someone who's strange. You know, so the entire time I was conscious, well, I did not enjoy that dinner. That was dinner from hell. I had wanted to leave that dinner very, very early, you know, because I was pretending. I was just focused on myself, pretending. But see, the opposite of that is humility. You know, when we are humble, you know, the word humble, humility, the root of that is humus, from Latin humus, meaning earth. You know, when we're humble, you know, we are rooted on the earth. We are rooted on who we are. And who we are is beautiful. Who we are is good, because who we are came from God, and who we are is a gift to everyone. And so when I begin to be much more at peace with myself, well, I've been enjoying all those dinners now, you know. You know, and you know this, you understand this, you know, when you immerse yourself in great conversation, great wine, things just flow and you are in flow and you are ennobled by that particular encounter, because you are true to yourself. You know, I remember that scene in the movie Titanic, you know, with Leo DiCaprio, you know, he's a poor man, and he got there, I don't know, by some stroke of luck, he got to the Titanic, and so it came to a time when he was able to join dinner with the rich and powerful of Titanic, and of course Katie Bates dressed him up so he can look respectable. But at the dinner table, well, he spoke of his poverty at the dinner table, and he was thankful of his poverty. You know, that's humility. And of course, to the consternation of everybody there at the table, he held his ground because he understood who he is. See, that's humility. To make ourselves gods, we need audience all the time. You know, when we know that we have audience all the time, well, we need to prop ourselves up, you know, so that we can get the honor and the praise of our audience. See, that is not the way to live. That's the reason why in the gospel today, Jesus presents the apostles who have this pride of life. He presented them with the image of a child, you know. And we all know what a child is. A child in this particular society has no value, has no voice. And from our own experience of children are dependent on their parents. Children are trusting of their parents. You know, they still don't have this attitude that, oh, it's me. No. They're confident that everything will be given to them. And so that's the image that the Lord is giving. The image of humility. In the kingdom of God, the virtue of humility ranks first. The virtue of humility is critical because the virtue of humility becomes the foundation of all the virtues. You want to grow in virtue? Well, start with humility first because that's the foundation of all the virtues. We are called today. We are all part of that kingdom. We are all in that kingdom of God now. But then the Lord continues to call us, continue to shape our understanding of what it means to be in that kingdom. We are called to be like children. We are called to be humble. In Divine Comedy of Dante, those who are prideful were given the punishment of carrying heavy boulders on their shoulder. So they're carrying heavy boulder. When you're carrying a heavy boulder, I haven't carried one, but I would imagine when you're carrying a heavy boulder, just like in the pictures, you know, you will be bent down. You are forced to look down when you're carrying a heavy boulder. This is what the souls who are prideful in purgatory were doing, carrying the heavy boulder, and they were looking down where? To the earth. They're forced to look down to the earth. They're forced to consider their humusness, their earthiness, their humanity. My friends, today, as we gather around the table of the Lord, as we partake of word and sacrament, may we continue to grow in our understanding of what it means to be a citizen of the kingdom. And today, we are called to be humble. We are called to behold the humus of our being. And that humility does not mean that we debase ourselves. No, I don't know anything. I'm a rug and you can step on me. No, that's not humility. That could even be false humility. Because true humility is understanding our giftedness and to live our lives from that giftedness. May our partaking of the body and blood of Christ today open our hearts to the gifts that we are, to the gifts that you are. And may we live from the understanding, from that humusness of our being, and thereby have wonder over the gifts of creation, have wonder over the gifts of salvation itself, the passion, death, and resurrection of Christ that is given to us and is plain to see, plain in sight for those who are humble of heart like little children.